Hey, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In today's episode, we welcome in Justin Patrick Pierce, author, intimacy teacher, and founder of the Yoga of Intimacy. Justin offers workshops and private training for men and women around the world to help them overcome challenges in relationship, master the embodiments of sexual polarity, and pursue a life of spiritual depth alongside their chosen partner. He and his life partner, London Angel Winters, are parents, passionate lovers, and co-authors of Playing with Fire, The Spiritual Path of Intimate Relationship, and The Awakened Woman's Guide to Everlasting Love. Justin has been studying and practicing sacred intimacy for more than a decade under the tutelage of world-renowned teachers. He educates men and women on spiritual and intimate development through a unique hands-on approach that prioritizes practicality over theory. Students of Justin truly learn what it takes to bring tangible change into their daily lives and relationships. Those who work with Justin and London enjoy a rare opportunity to learn from a real-life couple who have mastered the complex dynamics of modern relationships, turn the result into something beautiful and harmonious, and are experts at helping others do the same. Justin, brother, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show, man. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Mark. It's an honor to be here with you.
Justin, just reading the intro there, and that beautiful part where you were speaking, like, you know, Justin and London, we enjoyed a rare opportunity to learn from a real life couple. It rejigs a really funny memory I have. It's been a good number of years I've been following David Aida's work. You know, initially that was the first sort of conscious men's work. It was a tantric coach that I had a couple of beautiful conversations with. He gave me the Aida book, the Way of the Superior Man. And I remember reading it, and there was, the first couple of weeks reading it, I was getting it quite profoundly, but there was also a lot of kickback. And I remember at one point, my ego was infuriated. Mm-hmm. And I stomped upstairs and I went onto Google. I say it joking now, but like there was a real sincere kickback at that time. And I just started Googling, like, you know, Aida, you know, does he have a wife? Aida, the family man. And I was trying to hunt down, there was some part of me going, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he doesn't know, he mustn't know what life is like, you know, in marriage. He doesn't know my wife. He doesn't know. And I remember that day I caught myself. I was like, oh my God. And I was like 10 minutes into this witch hunt of David Aida. I smiled, I burst out laughing that day. I told him with my wife, but it's a beautiful and potent part of your bio with London, which is, I know you guys, I think is, if I, I've in my research, it's like it's over a decade, if not 12 years in, you know, deep, long-term committed intimacy together. That really was impressed upon me. And the fact that you, you know, self-describe in a comfortable, beautiful way, you know, you're passionate lovers. I just wanted to lead with that because, you know, this audience, we're all, you know, we're men showing up in the powerful role as sacred husbands. It's such an important part that I didn't want to be lost in this. You're actually living that. So I wanted to honor you first and foremost and just like bring that awareness to guys. But it's such an important part. So you're not going to be getting any kickback from me today like poor David got like those years ago.
That's a sign of good spiritual teaching, whether it's what we're reading in a book or what a teacher is saying to us. When we feel our egos become inflamed, there's an opportunity for awakening, and it means we are awakening. And our ego will be tested in every which way. Our beliefs will be tested. Our persona will be tested. And in that testing, it's a grueling process where we are consumed by that fire. And some people feel that fire and they say, well, screw this. That's wrong. That's stupid. I don't want anything to do that. Other people feel the fire and they go, maybe there's something to this, like you described. And then they keep going. And that fire becomes something that ultimately awakens you and purifies you. And it's for that very reason that our new book is called Playing with Fire. Because in sexual yoga, in sacred relationship, you're going to feel that fire, whether it's from the teachings you learn or from your intimate partner. And it's mostly going to come from your intimate partner. But that fire is your opportunity to throw a tantrum, run, get upset, or awaken.
Well, that definitely is the intention of, well, I'd say in this, the intention of this conversation, but everything that we do here underlying is just to awaken to that power. And in line with that, you know, I was saying to you just, you know, before hitting record, I've been following your teachings for a number of weeks now. I just want to say a quick hi to Fabrice from my men's group. I know he's been working with you directly. And before even knowing about you, your name and that, I've been hearing, you know, over the weeks and the months, Fabrice's embodiment and his deep intimate journey. And I was deeply impressed by how he was working with that and, you know, with this support behind the scenes. So just a nod and a sacred bow to Fabrice for connecting me in with you. But the last number of weeks, I've actually had my Saturday morning deep dive. I've for a number of months I've been getting up at 5 a.m. Monday to Friday for work, creative time. You know, we homeschooler girls, the living a full life. It's like, okay, get up at 5 and get that in. But I was actually listening to one of your videos there in 3 or 4 weeks ago, which was like this thing of you gotta know, like, with your woman, tell her when you're there and be completely there with her. But the flip side of that coin is like, tell her when you don't want to be there with her and be really clear. And as a result, I just want to share that here. As a result of that, the last 2 weeks, I've been getting up on my Saturday morning, and it's like that's mark time. I'm not doing work. I'm not doing family shit. I'm not doing, you know, like for a couple of weeks, myself and Matilda were getting up doing a tantra course. I really, you challenged me with that teaching to go, no, this is mark time. So in those 2 weeks, I've been listening predominantly to teachings from yourself. And there was some with you, with John Wineland. So just grounding myself in. Out of all of that, Justin, there's so many places I could go and would love to go. And I think we would need like a 10-part special series with you coming back on repeatedly. But to give us some structure, and I think I reflected on, like, well, with your sacred presence here, what would serve the guys in the deepest way possible? What I'd love to do a deep dive on is, it's inspired by an article I read off yours. And we'll see where it goes, but it's like mastering the dragon of sexual desire. I know for myself in marriage, and I know working with guys more and more, you know, there is this general, almost like just ingrained, like it's an absolute truth, belief that, well, you get married, and, you know, there's fire in the beginning, because why? You're at your youngest point. You know, obviously when you get married, that's going to be the youngest point of your relationship together. But as you age, and as the deeper you go into marriage, the fire goes, almost like there's this inherent nature. It's like, you know, fuck as much as you can when you're young, because you're just not going to get that time back. That's a major belief system. And it's, in my experience, almost all pervasive. And the only people, sort of like yourself, the only people that I hear embodying something different are people that have done tantric work or are like more into conscious relating. So for today, I know in that article, you broke it down into three main reasons why men struggle in keeping desire and the fire going. I'll state those out here at the beginning. Maybe if we, to give some structure, I'll bring your wisdom on each of those. The first one is, as men, we restrain our desire. The second, he thinks his desire will be satisfied once he has what he wants. And the third, he spoils what he has by wishing for what he doesn't have. Going to the first one, Justin, what do you mean by he restrains his desire?
So ultimately, what that first portion of the article is intending to explain is that for a man to realize his full potential, he must be in touch with his desires and he must pursue his desires. That desire is what motivates you to pursue your life's purpose before you die. If you don't have that desire, then any old job will do, any old relationship will do, any old monotonous way of life, just going through the motions of life, will do for the man who lacks desire, who has a weak desire. And that man suffers the fact that his desire is so weak. He suffers the fact that he doesn't have a place to direct his attention and the drive that exists inside of him into something that feels purposeful to him. So when a man is out of touch with his desire is weak, or he restrains his desire out of fears, he will suffer tremendously. In a way, he spiritually castrates himself. He divorces himself from his manhood. He's out of touch with his actual power and prowess that makes him an archetype of a life worth living. And that's what he wants to feel. He wants to feel like his life is worth something, in service to something, ideally in service to something greater than himself. So that first piece of the article is talking about the necessity of desire. The desire is critically important to us as men, that it's something we must spend time considering and cultivating, letting it become something that is ultimately intelligent. And if we're suppressing our desire or hiding from it or not looking at it, not examining it closely, we'll feel like we're just going through the motions of life and our life will ultimately feel purposeless. That is a death sentence. That is a kind of suffering that none of us need to endure. But what actually starts to help us lift out of that suffering? It usually requires facing our fears. And the first question we ask ourselves is, okay, what are you afraid to do? Like, what are you afraid to give in this lifetime that you think if you started to move in this direction and pursue this goal or try and give this gift, what fears are in the way of that? What are you afraid of? That people will judge you, that you're not smart enough, that you don't have enough skills, that you're not old enough. You know, so many excuses come up along the way. You become intimately aware of the fears standing between you and the deepest purpose you want to give. And that's how you get started on that path. Your fears become your compass that guides you to the true north of your purpose.
My immediate thing that comes up as you give that beautiful answer is it's almost like a curveball, because in my mind and my nervous system, like the word desire, it immediately connotates with sexual desire. It's like almost like, Justin, no, you misunderstood the question, man. I asked you about desire and you're talking about life's purpose. But every part of my nervous system gets turned on going, man, like, That's just so true. I know in myself, like I know connecting in with guys that I'm coaching around the world, it's like they come with, oh yeah, to be the husband she brags about. And yet, ultimately, the elephant in the room is a life's purpose. They're really discontent in work. They're earning money, but like the vast majority of their weekly lives are spent on a mission that they don't believe in. That has nothing to do with their soul, has nothing to do with their heart. And I suppose, you know, it's nothing to do with that libido, you know, that sexual energy, which again, part of life, it's been sanitized, like sexual energy is for the bedroom. No, it's like sexual energy is for life. So, and that question, like, what are you afraid to do? it's so startlingly direct. So is that the place that guys need to start before they enter the realm of, you know, reconnecting with their desire in the bedroom? Is that an essential tenet for a man?
It's not. No. You can work the other way. You can work starting with sexual desire. And then what you learn about your sexual desire tells you about your desires around purpose. So you can understand desire and become more skillful at penetrating your woman, or you can understand desire and become more skillful at penetrating the world. But either way, your desire is a motivation to penetrate the world with your consciousness. So desire, ultimately, when we sit in the inquiry of what is desire, what actually is desire? Because if you can't answer that question, you'll be so confused by all of the different complexities in which desire manifests, whether it's around purpose or in relationship or any other area of our lives. But we must understand what desire is at the root. And that's why this practice of sexual yoga, we're using sex as a vehicle to understand desire. This path isn't about sex only. It's part of it. It's included. But sex is a tool for awakening, to learn. And what are we learning about? We're learning about desire. What is desire? Desire at the very root level is an impulse for something to be different than it is. It's an impulse for something to be different than it is. Now, that in and of itself, we can discuss at length. You can inquire into that mystery for years and continuously learn new things every single day. One of those core things that we start to awaken to is the fact that so long as desire for something to be different is in us, in our hearts, in our bodies, in our minds, just that desire for something to be different than it is, what that presupposes is that we are ultimately dissatisfied with what is. We're dissatisfied with our job, so we desire another job. We're dissatisfied with the dynamics in our relationships, so we want the dynamics to be different. We're dissatisfied with our sex life, so we want our sex life to be different. We're dissatisfied. It's our utter dissatisfaction with what is. That is the precursor to the desire for change. That's important to realize. Because if we are constantly dissatisfied with what is, we are in a perpetual state of suffering and misery. Perpetual. And the feelings inside of us is, I'm not good enough. I'm a failure. I'm not significant enough. I'm not loved enough. I'm not trusted enough. My life's not important enough. Like so on and so forth. Not enough, not enough, not enough, not enough. And that becomes the backdrop of every single thing we experience in our lives. It becomes the motive behind the poetry we write and every story we write and every article we research and every conversation we have. The underlying experience is, I'm dissatisfied. I'm suffering. And there's a great desire for change. So these are just some of the core insights that become available to us as we really start to dive deeper into this inquiry. And in the article that you're describing, Mastering the Dragon of Sexual Desire, this is the first piece I present in that article.
I have to say, when you ask the question, like, what is desire? I know I've read it, but there is a part of me going, wow, there's a part of my mind just listening is, I'm drawing blank. Maybe I haven't. There just was an emptiness there. It's like one of these Zen like questions, like, oh fuck. I was feeling this pressure of, Man, I don't have a full my version of that answer. And when you spoke that, you know, the impulse for something to be different than it is, and then speaking in a more complete way, feeling into it, Justin. I look back, you know, my backstory is like, it was 12 years where this podcast and my work was birthed from. His first 12 years of marriage, then a marriage breakdown, breakthrough experience with my woman, and like the last three and a half, 4 years has been the awakening process, dusting myself down and doing the work. But the first 12 years for sure, you know, that desire, seeing what I was not liking, but knowing that I wasn't liking it and then taking action on it. So it's like there was this background, I was caught in this perpetual loop of resenting what was, having some clear, deep knowledge of I don't like this. But it's like I felt completely locked that, well, that's your lot, Mark. You know, that's just it. I've tracked that back to childhood. I've tracked it back to schooling. I've tracked it back to society at large. But by and large, that's just how my nervous system was perceiving. How is it? I'm curious, because I really am like tapping into guys in men's circles around the world and one-on-one coaching. I think you're speaking, it's like it's almost universal, but how is it, or why is it, that as men we end up losing connection with desire to such an extent? What have you observed in your life and with the hundreds that you've been seeing around the world?
I don't think we ever lose touch or relationship with desire. For example, the desire to pee will arise at times. The desire for food will arise at times. The desire to look at a beautiful woman will arise at times. The desire to read a book or watch television. So desire is a fundamental part of our existence. It's a fundamental mechanism that arises within us as organisms. And when those desires are completely unconscious, our attention is hijacked by whichever television network, television show, social media application, junk food, restaurant, pulls on our attention strongly enough. Porn website, Instagram model. Like whoever pulls on that cord just enough, our attention just mindlessly just goes right to them. And we are realizing, the world is waking up to the fact that your attention is a commodity. It is the most valuable commodity, it turns out, is your attention. So everything around you in your life is trying to steal your attention from you. It wants to steal your attention. And when your desires are unconscious, like you haven't clarified your own desire, then any one of these applications or forms of entertainment or forms of fashion or forms of food, they can just say, hey, how about this? You want this, don't you? And you go, oh yeah, I guess I do. Here's my money. Oh yeah, here I do. Here's my attention. Oh yeah, of course I do. And we are fragmented and we're pulled in a million directions at once. And we lose the clarity of our own consciousness. We wake up in the morning and don't know what our life's purpose is, because we wake up and we look at our phone and we start scrolling and hearing about everyone else's life purpose. How on earth are you going to clarify your own life purpose if within the first 30 minutes of you waking, you've just read about hundreds of other people's life purposes? Your mind is bombarded. Your attention is being stolen from you. So this is what it looks like when your own desire is unconscious and you just let your habit patterns run the show. For example, I grew up in a house that was not health conscious. I loved sugar. I loved candy. I loved junk food. I loved processed food. Ramen noodles, man, I would take it any day over any other food. My habits growing up were horrible. By the time I was like 10 years old, I must have had like 7 cavities already filled out. It was a mess. My parents were very ignorant when it came to that thing. So my perception is when I walked into a grocery store, if it's in the grocery store, it's okay to eat. They wouldn't sell us poison, would they? So that was my perception. And I would allow that mechanism to dictate my life for a period of time. And then what was the result? Terrible teeth, bad hygiene. My health started to be compromised. And then I had this whole awakening around health, like realizing, wait a minute, these products really want my attention bad. I still see a donut shop and I want to walk into it every time I see one, but I don't ever, because I understand I'm in touch with another part of me that desires wellness, that desires to feel better 2 hours later. Whereas if I go on the donut shop, I'll feel good for 30 seconds as I eat it, and then I will feel terrible for the rest of the day. So this is what I'm talking about. This is the root level of desire. And this inquiry that we're into, even though I'm a sexual yoga teacher, this is what we're actually talking about. It's coming into a conscious relationship with how desire moves through your nervous system and informs your decision-making. And is your desire conscious or unconscious? And if it's unconscious, when you apply it to your health will suffer. If it's unconscious and you apply it to your relationship will suffer. If it's unconscious and you apply it to purpose, your purpose will suffer. So making desire conscious is foundational.
Myself and Matilda, my beautiful queen, we went to a really popular pet farm there. It was 2 days ago. And it was very, very busy, bank holiday weekend here in Ireland, lovely weather. So everybody was out. And I came back from the bathroom and Matilda just, she was sort of red face smiling. She's like, oh my God, like, see that guy over there? Like, he's eyeing me up, Mark, but it's like, he's eyeing me up at a level where, I mean, it's like stalker levels. So this sort of became the running joke for the afternoon. It's like, you know, we were hanging out for 2 hours in a similar space with this dude. And I mean, it was really, I think definitely an unconscious desire in him was to look at the beautiful woman, which was the object of his desire, like maybe unconsciously. And it's like, he couldn't take his eyes off her. And he was there with his wife and, well, I'm assuming a wife with 2 kids. And I could definitely relate with that. You know, there's no shaming the guy. And I really get your thing. It's like the unconscious desire, you know, when you spoke to the desire to look at an attractive woman. My curiosity here, Justin, is a big part of my learning to overcome, and I say overcome with like a nod and a bow to it's a long term, it probably will follow me for life, as Robert Glover says, the overcoming the Mr. Nice Guy persona. A big part for me, Justin, was realizing how much of a desire, an unconscious desire, was in me to look at beautiful women, that there was this shamed, you know, Roman Catholic Ireland absolute shaming of sexual desire. And in my home growing up, there was a lot of that going on. So I definitely like really complicated my, there again, first 12 years in marriage. And it's like, it still is there. My curiosity is, you know, how do I reconcile this part? I don't know, I want your wording on it, but what comes up in for me is like this, like a biological inheritance from, you know, thousands and millions of years of evolution, where as a natural you know, male, my nervous system will lock in on an attractive woman. And there's a part of my healing journey has been, well, that's okay, Mark. But what, how do I reconcile that primal part of me in a conscious way, but honor my sacred queen beside me, who her nervous system wants to fucking growl at me, you know, if I look at another woman? And there's a curiosity here with Daida's teachings that I just want to bring in, because I need somebody of your level to maybe discern this. My curiosity on a deeper level of practice, Justin, is in Daida's teachings, what I have picked up, and part, I know there's many profound teachings, but Daida was talking about, you know, the attraction there, that's natural, that's beautiful for a man, for a woman, if that's his sexual orientation. But anything beyond a nanosecond, that's leakage of attention. But there's also teachings, which is the feminine is a source of great, profound beauty. And it's like, if you see a woman, you know, you can energize yourself and like let that energy run through you. So my curiosity comes from the context. I'm in a deep, committed, long-term relationship with a powerful queen who really doesn't fucking want me, you know, feeling into the energy of the opposite sex. It's like, it's whore and only whore. How do I play within that context, but without negating this primal part of me and making it wrong? Because there's a part of me like, I don't want to make that primal part of me wrong anymore. I leave it at that. It's quite a commentary there, but I'm curious what your response is.
There's a lot to that. It's a very in-depth question. And each man that's wrestling with the inquiry that you just shared would need to go about it in a unique way. Because what you just described is the heart and soul of what sexual yoga is actually about. Is you have a sex drive. And your sex drive is primal, it's animalistic, it's based in your deep vital center, in your lower vital center, your perineum, in your genitals, in your navel. So part of this waking up is making sure that those parts of you aren't abandoned. Like, you're not just trying to say, like, I don't have those parts. Let me pretend those parts aren't there. Let me, you know, try and cut myself in half and divorce myself from my own sexuality. A lot of spiritual traditions try that path. They do that. They'll go that route and try and have you divorce yourself from desire. That's one very old way that has been around for a long time where people attempt that. In this body of work, we're not doing that. We're including your primal sexual desire, and we're learning how to alchemize it into conscious love. And that's the distinction. We're trying to make it from something that is just merely animalistic and transform it into something that is ultimately conscious and loving. How we do that? Is first, and there's many places we can start, but first, that desire is wanting something. And if you feel into that desire in your genitals, wherever it arises in your body, in your belly, what is it wanting? What do you actually want to experience? What change are you desiring? Are you desiring to be with that other woman? Are you desiring to touch that other woman? Are you desiring to penetrate that other woman? Like, what do you actually desire? What is the root there? And Mark, I don't know if you're able to be in this inquiry with me now, but I'm curious, what comes up for you?
I am open to it. And for radical transparency with you and with guys listening in, This is quite a high charge for me to open up with it, because my beautiful Queen Matilda, she's known that, like, for the last number of weeks I've been very excited about this interview, and I think she's actually going to listen into this. She doesn't listen into too many. So I want to speak that, but I want to lean into this fire as well, because I think there's always this amazing profound depth. So I will embrace the opportunity. Slowing down and tapping into what triggers in me in moments like that. I think the deepest yearning that shows up for me, Justin, in moments of, you know, fleeting moments, a glance of eyes, that there's just this sudden aliveness and there's an intensity to it with another woman, or I think that's it. It's this feeling of that radical aliveness that in the midst of beautiful intentionality, beautiful life, you know, the fullness of a lived family life with parenting, with chores, with financial responsibilities, etc., 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 that moment speaks to some part that just wants to break free, some part that would almost like, could I just want fucking that radical, liberated, intense emotional experience. I suppose more often. That's what's coming through me as an initial clearest response that I can give.
Got it. So what you're describing is that in these moments where that feeling would arise, at least in your past, you know, you'd see someone and then you'd have this experience inside of you. There's this part of you that's ultimately wanting to feel free in your sexual expression. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah.
Like there's, it's like a caged animal is in there. You're feeling this life force energy. Like there's an aliveness you described, like a vitality that runs through your system, and then letting that beast kind of run free. Ultimately, am I hearing you right?
Yeah, for sure. And to give more transparency, you know, if I talk definitely looking back in my past, there's been significant work I've been doing, you know, the last number of years, but for my past for years, and I've brought this up with Matilda in the last number of years, it's like there was a deep desire to actually to fuck. I don't want to disconnect from that and not share that part of me. That's actually has been a real edge for me. One of the most transformational, just to give you a little bit of insight, Justin, you know, one of the most fearful edges was owning this with my queen. There was one day when I spoke to Matilda, where I said, we have our king and queen walk on the road every single day. We just talk about what's live in our deep intimate relationship together. And I just stopped her and said, hey, I want you to know that there was always this worst case scenario of like a beach in Bali, like a beach in Bali representing like this hedonic sort of environment where everybody is fit, everybody is beautiful. But like her greatest fear was sort of, well, every woman is miraculously beautiful, tanned, Instagram version, on show, bikini clad, etc. And one of the greatest edges that I've met, it was turning to her that day and just saying, hey, baby, I want you to know that if I went to such a like a worst case scenario for you, like in a beach in Bali, and it's like, all the women are beautiful. All of the women are, you know, like tanned, fit, ridiculously gorgeous, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, I know there's a part of me that knows within a nanosecond, one glance, it's like, I know two or three women that there's a part of me would fuck and would desire fucking. But it's like, here's the thing. I know that I'll hold you in close. We'll march straight to our beachside hut and I'll fuck you into joy, into bliss. Yet what this conversation, and this is just owning what's coming up in my nervous system as we've talked, Justin, is I have a long way to go. For myself and Matilda, it's like that conversation was had, but I know that was very overwhelming for Matilda to take. She was almost like, Mark, I really get that. If I remember well, the wording was along the lines of, Mark, I really get that and I honor you for expressing that. But there was almost this feeling just enough, like she said, hey, all of this shadow work you're doing on the topic of sex, it's like this just is overwhelming for me. Almost along, like, sort of do that work. I trust the guys you're working with. But it's like, Mark, when you share that with me, it's like that just, that's overwhelming. It's too much for me. Not that you're too much, Mark, but that expression is too much for me. I need to own that. So I want to share that with you, Justin, but also the guys going in. This is just me live, not having my shit sorted out. This is a beautiful conversation to have, but this is just real dynamics that have been live in my marriage. I wanted to invite you in on that part, Justin.
Yeah, I appreciate your vulnerability around all of this, Mark, and transparency here. The first thing I want to share with you and also with your listeners is there is a fundamental difference between the male and female biologies and the way that we've evolved and the way that we've gotten to this point in history. And the male biology is hardwired to impregnate as many partners as possible to a degree, because it's like you don't know how many of your children are going to survive. You don't know who's going to survive. And I'm talking about like tribal conditions. I'm talking about long ago where it was like quite difficult to guarantee that life would continue, and the impulse to spread seed far and wide, so to speak, was very strong in all men. Now, traditionally, it's like only the rulers would get the ability to express that because their genes were considered the most important. And in order for the culture and the community to go on, men couldn't just be having sex with everybody else's wives. So it would have caused a lot of chaos even back then. But the impulse there for a man to spread his seed as far and wide as possible is deep within his biology. Reciprocally, the female biology is if she gets pregnant, that's a huge consequence to her. Meaning if she gets pregnant by the wrong guy, well, now what if he's not strong? What if he's not well? What if he's not competent? Now she's very vulnerable with this child. She can't defend herself. She can't even gather food for herself because she's going to be, you know, taken up by this child for 9 months. And then when she has the child, she's going to have a screaming child in the middle of, you know, the wilderness, so to speak, could be attacked at any time. There's nothing more vulnerable than holding an infant in the wild and hoping you're protected. So her decision-making at a very deep evolutionary level is she must be very cautious about who her partner is. So the female biology has a tendency towards being very, very careful and consider about partners, whereas the male biology doesn't have that whatsoever. It actually has the reciprocal of that. And that's based in like evolutionary differences that men and women have because of the consequences of getting someone pregnant. The consequences for a female are far more life-threatening than they are for the men. The man can just impregnate and go. No consequence for impregnating someone. This is what's happening at the primal animal level of our nervous systems. And now here we are in a very, you know, we're somewhat cultured, you know, we've evolved past that, but these mechanisms are still very much alive inside of us. And when she says like, hey, Mark, I love the work that you're doing, but man, this is difficult for me. I can't even relate. It makes perfect sense. And most females can't relate to that part in you because it's scary. It's untrustworthy. Desires are running rampant. It's incredibly destructive force that's inside of you. And it's no secret that desire is one of the most destructive forces on this planet, human desire. There is nothing more destructive than human desire. And that's why I feel this body of work is so important. Because when our desire is unconscious and we let our primal reactive tendencies influence the decisions we make, our lives will turn to shit. And the lives of others that we impact will turn to shit as a result. We will just create chaos for everyone, even the people we love. That's the consequence of desires out of control. So learning how to alchemize these parts of you is a first two-step process. One, we must recognize what's actually present in both of your biologies and honor that. Those are there and they're not going anywhere. And that's why it's going to feel like a lot of tension and conflict innately. Before you've even opened your mouths, that conflict is there, right? So now your work, Mark, in this body of work is, how do I become conscious and trustworthy without divorcing myself from my sexual energy? Because here's what she doesn't want. She doesn't want you to castrate yourself sexually. She doesn't want you to become asexual. She doesn't want you to shut down sexually and no longer have any sexual desire in your body at all. That's not what she wants. She wants to feel the full force of your sexual desire. Like you could climb that mountain or fuck those women or take on the world. But rather than doing that, you're turning your desire towards her in a conscious way. You're giving the full force of your desire to her as a gift. A confession of your love, a gesture of sacrifice, so to speak. So this is where we're going in this conversation. Now, how do you get there, so to speak? You described it quite well, which is like, okay, I see these women. I'm going to turn around and take that impulse, turn it towards you and go make love to you in our room, right? Now, when this becomes more skillful, so to speak, what she would need to know is, or she would need to experience in you, is your non-attachment to the other women. When a man's desire is possessive, it's very destructive. So for example, a possessive desire is, wow, look at her. She is so beautiful. I want her. That's very destructive right away. For you to think those thoughts, particularly as a taken man, for you to feel those thoughts and interpret what's going on as that event, it's going to be destructive for you because then you're going to crave that other woman, and it's going to be destructive for your partner because she's going to feel you craving that other woman. That is a destructive pattern. That's an unconscious, unskillful way to wield desire. Now, here's an alternative. You're out on the beach, your feet are in the sand, you take a breath into your body and you go, man, the sand feels delicious. It's nourishing my body. The minerals in the sand are feeding my nervous system. You look out over the horizon, you see the water, the breeze hits your body and you go, feel the sensation of the breeze. You see the sun in the sky and you feel its warmth. You inhale and you take that in. You see these women walking by and you see their beautiful bodies and you breathe that in the same way. No differently than if a bird was beautifully flying by and you were just taken by the sight of the bird. So you're breathing in the radiance of nature herself. You're not breathing in that woman or that woman or that woman. You're breathing in the totality of radiant light energy of nature herself. And you're inhaling it into your body. You're letting it activate your cells. When you breathe it in, you breathe it into your belly and genitals. As you exhale, you let that life force energy surge up through your heart, through your throat, through your mind. And as that experience energizes you, even if it's coming from like sexy women in bikinis, you do the work of alchemizing that without telling your woman what's going on. You're responsible for bringing out this ability to see all of radiant life energy as that gift that revitalizes you. The same way when you go into nature and that nature walk revitalizes you. It's no different than seeing a beautiful woman walking down the beach in a bikini. But we need to rewire our nervous systems to understand that. That's part of the alchemy, is that seeing a waterfall in nature is equivalent to seeing a beautiful woman walking down the street. You're able to inhale and receive that gift, but you're doing it without trying to possess anything. You're not looking at the waterfall and going, oh, I possess that waterfall. I'm, you know, going to take that home. I want to ravish you, or looking at a sunset in that way. We must disconnect possessiveness and receive the energy that's coming, you bring it into your body and genitals, and you turn that towards your partner, and you say, I love you. You look fucking hot right now. I want to kiss your neck. I want to pin you down in the sand. So all she's getting is you having already alchemized that energy in your body. And then you turn it towards her as the gift that's feeding that sexual energy into your relationship. And as a result, your sexual desire stays included. But your sexual desire ultimately becomes something that you transmute and give and feed the relationship you actually desire. And that strengthens love and trust. Your desire is actually something she comes to trust even more once you've learned this technique. Now, this is just one example of countless examples we can do to explore how this operation works. But I'd like to start there and see what comes up.
This is, I think, the perfect answer to one question that I had. Just a reminder, you know, of the three parts, you know, he restrains his desire. And the first part, you've spoken like so much to embracing that desire, going from unconscious to conscious. And the second part was master the dragon. And it was, I do actually have that quote from your article, Justin. It's from Friedrich Nietzsche. Ultimately, it is the desire, not the desire, that we love. And my question coming in today was, you know, I was so curious, like, can you define or describe what this is, this the desire that you're talking about? But I intuitively feel you're just after giving like this beautiful description of what the desire is. It's that you're tapping into that radiant life energy that is all pervasive, not just through the narrow guise of what we have been socially bombarded as men, you know, conditioned that the only radiant life force energy is tits and ass on show on Instagram, or, you know, porn or naked. You know, there's all of these stereotypical, that's the one point, again, controlling our sacred, most sacred resource, the of attention. Have I understood that correctly, that that's what you're like, it is the desire that we love, not the desired? Am I, in a very rudimentary, non-poetic way, getting close to what Nietzsche is pointing to in that quote?
Yeah, I'll do my best to describe it in a simple way. Desire is a very interesting thing, because we desire what we feel we do not have. If we have it, we don't desire it anymore. So, for example, there may be a time in your life where you desired having a certain amount of money. So you work really hard, you pursue getting that amount of money, and then one day you get that amount of money, and then suddenly you don't desire that amount of money anymore. Now you desire a bigger amount of money. The desire has moved itself. Or maybe you got so much money, now you desire something else. And this is kind of the gift of the Western world. So many people becoming like multimillionaires, realizing money ain't it. And now they desire a life of spiritual depth, right? Our desire is constantly moving on us. You may desire a delicious meal, and you look at the food, you're hungry, and you go, oh, I desire, you know, this meal. It looks so delicious. And you sit down and you eat the meal and you get full, nice and full. And you go, I don't desire this food anymore. You've eradicated the desire for the food. Whether it's the desire for food, for money, or for sex, what we're always trying to do is we're trying to rid ourselves of the feeling of desire. Because desire is irritating. If you let yourself feel your desire for food long enough, it's going to start to hurt. It's going to become really uncomfortable, and you're going to want to rid yourself of that desire. If you try and, you know, do the same thing with ejaculating, like you feel the desire to ejaculate, but you don't let yourself ejaculate. That feeling to ejaculate builds an intensity and starts to almost become an irritant in your system, particularly if you're still engaging sexually, right? You engage sexually, but you're not ejaculating. That intensity to ejaculate gets stronger and stronger and stronger. It turns into like a fire of irritation. And you're just like, I just need to ejaculate. And you want to rid yourself of this feeling of desire. So you ejaculate and you go, ah, I don't desire ejaculating anymore. How relieving this feels. This feels so nice that I don't feel the irritation of desire. So I bring this up because it's not the object. It's not ejaculating. It's not the food. It's not the thing. It's the desire of that thing that keeps us entranced and engaged and conscious, right? Like, think about it this way, as you know, you're sitting in front of a beautiful woman and she's tantalizing you with her body and you want her so bad. You could imagine how attentive you would become. You'd be breathing deep. You'd be looking at her. You just want to ravish her. And if you didn't let yourself ravish her, you just felt the intensity to ravish her, it would just build and build and build. It becomes very ecstatic. But then the moment you actually touch and ejaculate, that feeling dissipates completely. And then you're like, give me a beer, give me a pizza. I'll take a nap. You know, let's go watch Netflix. Your intensity is gone. You're no longer even conscious. You just want to zone out, essentially. You lose the intensity that desire was conjuring out of you. This body of work is about teaching you not to get rid of that irritation of desire, but to actually learn how to love it, how to alchemize it into something that's constantly making you more conscious. And this is why in sexual yoga, we don't ejaculate so much. Is because when you hold it, it keeps your body alive and conscious. For a lot of men, it's going to feel irritating to do that. You might even not be able to sleep at night because it gets so intense at times. But eventually you begin to acclimate and find a homeostasis in relationship to intense desire. And then desiring becomes a welcome part of the human experience. You're no longer sitting there constantly trying to get rid of your desires. You start to love the experience of desiring. You recognize it's necessary. It's beautiful because there's nothing worse than when a man stops desiring. Think about the guy who's achieved all his life goals, made all the money he ever needed, and then suddenly he's, you know, 55, 65 years old, and he's just like, I don't have a purpose anymore. I've done it all. The misery he feels not knowing what's next, because it's like he's run out of desire, so to speak. He's fulfilled all of them. He's caught all of them. And then there's misery there because life starts to feel purposeless. So when we bring desire into a healthy relationship, we realize, yes, desire is irritating. It's likely the most irritating thing in the world. For example, if you were sitting perfectly still and your face started to get itchy, and the instruction was, do not scratch your face. Just observe the itchy feeling on your face. It's like as you sit there trying to be still, your body gets all tense. It's like somehow the itchiness gets more intense, more intense, more intense, more intense. The desire to scratch is so intense, but you don't scratch. You're training your nervous system to be with the intensity of desire without reacting to it. In that moment, you become free. You realize your strength to not react, but to be with the irritation of desire in a way that is conscious. And then you gain control over your life. That's when you gain control over your life. That's when you begin the process of mastering your sexual energy. When you can be with the intensity of sexual desire and not have to scratch, not have to ejaculate, not have to get the attention of the woman on the other side of the room, not have to create an arc outside of your relationship with another person. But you can alchemize it in your own body and turn that desire towards that which is most important to you, like your relationship, like your purpose, like where you really want to place your attention. Reactivity is no longer driving the bus, so to speak. You are.
I'm getting how this is a spiritual practice. Whole life spiritual practice. when you're talking, and like the it's about focusing on the desire and not on the desired. It, in my understanding from what you're saying, Justin, it's like the object that I know I'm desiring is like a relief. It's like the pain of, you know, business, of entrepreneurship, of raising a family, of payments. The pain is, oh man, the cash flow. And the desire is, could I just end this? Could like millions just flow in and I wouldn't have this pain anymore? But I do get this two-sided coin. It's like this brain fuck of the universe, which is like, well, once you get that need met, Mark, like, where's the joy of entrepreneurship? And like, where's the absolute joy? And I do know within myself, it's sexually speaking, sexually explicitly, like within the bedroom, within sexual, that's explicit one-on-one sexual dance with my queen. When I'm hearing you set it up like that, there's almost this omnipresent part of me seeking that relief, which no matter how much I've, you know, been practicing the last couple of years, just it's almost omnipresent, where there's a part of my mind going to, if it's not 5 seconds ahead, it's like 5 minutes ahead, the point of ejaculation. There's this edginess of I'm wanting to get my queen to the point of which, oh, like, you know, they're recently, it was like we investigating, she had the first G-spot orgasm that was like, you know, it wasn't a fluke. She's had those experiences before, but if like doing deep dive and tantric readings and teachings has like brought her there. But there was a tension in me. It's like, I wanted the relief to know, is what I'm doing in the now fucking working? It's like wanting life to let me know now, not in 5 minutes time, that what I'm doing now, I'm winning. If this makes sense, I'm sort of smiling here going, I think there's some real profound shift happening in me and I'm struggling to have the words. I'm going to consciously just serve the ball back over the net to yourself, Justin. Is it making sense to your experienced mind what I'm reporting into space? I don't want to ramble.
Yeah, I think I'm picking up what you're saying, and you know what you're describing is subtle. So I'll take a stab. I don't know if it's exactly speaking to what you're referring to, but I'm going to take a stab. And what we wake up to ultimately walking this path is the fact that nature herself is always responding to us. Always responding to us in the present moment. She's always either opening or closing in response to our consciousness or unconsciousness, to our equanimity or our reactivity. We are always in relationship with her. We are never not in relationship with her. And I mean relationship, you as consciousness, you as the constant of consciousness, the you that has this body, mind. And what is nature? Nature is your body, your thoughts. Everything you feel inside of you is nature, changing constantly. The world around you and the world inside of you is constantly changing. The only aspect of you that does not change is consciousness itself, the constant of consciousness itself, the eternal witness, where since you were as young as you can remember, looking in the mirror, it was always the same you looking back. And then as you were older in your teens, you look in the mirror and it was the same you. And now as you look in the mirror, it's the same you there. It's always been the same you as your face has changed, as your thoughts have changed, as your emotions have changed, as the world around you has changed. Everything is changing. Everything that changes is the feminine. The only thing that is masculine, so to speak, is consciousness itself, that which does not change. So when we understand that that's what's happening here, that's what you are, that's what this body of work is here to reveal to you, is that you are always in relationship with her, with a capital H, then it
You start to recognize that in this moment right now, she's here with you, responding to you, to your consciousness. And you describe, am I succeeding or failing? Is the part of the mind that is seeking change. But there's also a part of you that can be present with what is. And the moment you see her and breathe her in as she is without needing her to change at all, that's when real magic starts to happen. That's the spaciousness a woman needs for her to have deep orgasms. She needs you to rest as consciousness so she could feel not pressured. Because if she feels rushed at all by your desire for a change in state, for something to be different than it is, her body will create just enough tension to prevent deeper orgasm. But when she feels in you your ability to be with the moment as it is, to inhale and receive this moment as it is, her nervous system begins to relax and she's able to feel deeper into her own sensuality because she can trust your presence. And your trustworthy presence comes from your ability to be with what is without needing it to change. This is called equanimity. Your ability to be with what is without needing it to change. To be with what is without needing it to change. And that doesn't mean you sit here suffering the moment. You love the moment. You love what is. You don't need it to change. You're not just clenching your teeth, squeezing your fists, waiting for the next moment. You actually rest in this present moment, not needing this moment to be different than it is. And when she feels you loving her like that, when you direct that skill towards her, and you communicate through your eyes and your breath, I love you. I don't need you to change. I don't need you to be any different than you are. I love you just as you are, exactly as you are. That's when her heart and her body open in a way that they've never opened before. That's what we're here to cultivate, is that degree of equanimity where you can truly be with what is, because you realize you're already in relationship with her. She is already all around you and she's responding to you in real time now. And when you go unconscious or forget that, she'll react accordingly. She'll close. But when you love her consciously, you will see her open every second of every moment that you are alive.
It's the in the moment receiving of that feedback has been the biggest edge for me. I think I'm confident I've got very good at it, Justin, you know, over the last number of years, conversationally, outside of the bedroom. You know, and she can, to like call upon, you know, ferocious feedback in my parenting, how I'm showing up, if I'm present or not. And I know definitely I'll own it here. It's like my edge is asking for that direct feedback immediate, or not even asking for the verbal. Matilda came me, I was saying it to her and it was like bringing this like masculine, can I bring this into a linear rational part? It's like, you know, I was reading Daida and I was like, oh, you know, like, I'd love if you could give me direct feedback, you know, just tell me. Mm-hmm. She sort of got annoyed and irritated. And there was a part of me, I was confused. It was like, but I read it. I'm going by what, you know, I read in Daida's book. She's like, I am telling you, just feel into me. It's like, I am telling you moment to moment. You don't need me to verbalize and say, yes, more of that, please. It's like, if you're present with me, you know it. I know. Well, first of all, it was that beautiful direct feedback. But I'm tapping into what you're saying, like the she, my beautiful queen. But I'm tapping in that you're also spreading that to life. You know, the life force of the universe. She is constantly telling me, and by extension, every single guy. But if I'm understanding the core of it all, like the golden thread and all mystical traditions that I've been practicing, Eckhart Tolle, Buddhism, you know, teacher like you in this conversation, to peak performance, to more sort of, it's sort of mainstream science, neuroscience, is flow state. The core golden thread appears to me that it's just unanimous from what I've read and what I've heard. Get in the present moment. That's the key. That's the ultimate access point. And if I'm hearing you correctly, like in love with our divine queen, it's just get impeccably present in this moment and accepting and loving whatever our women are showing up with, our wives, like the good, bad, the ugly. There's no judgment there. There's no good, bad or ugly. It's just what is, and love and accept that. Is that the golden key? Is that the nugget that myself as a man and every man listening in, that we need to take that on board?
There's two things I'd like to say about that. The first is, no, that is not the golden key on its own. What we just talked about, equanimity, is half of the equation. And what we talked about at first, desire, is the other half of the equation. What she wants to feel in you, what's going to create the deepest fuck, the deepest level of trust, the trust in your leadership, trust in your consciousness, desire for your sexual hunger, which is going to create all of that, is she needs to experience in you simultaneously an intense desire, clear desire for what you want, a ferocity, a fire in you that burns, that makes you strong, capable of manifesting what you want in this world. She wants to feel that, and she wants to be fucked by that. She wants to feel your desire. She wants to feel your want. I want. I want. I want. Now that terrifies her, but it also turns her on. And that's why your job is to make your desire something that is worthy of trust and conscious and loving. Paradoxically, she also needs to feel your equanimity, your ability to be with her and be with the moment exactly as they are, not needing the moment to change. I allow this moment to be as it is. I love you. I love this moment as it is. I don't need anything to change. And I want, and I don't need anything to change. And I want you closer to me. I want you to sit on my lap. I want you to lay on your back. She wants to feel that, and at the same time feeling you, your equanimity, that you don't need her or the moment to change at all. You burn with the desire. So you speak your desires and you sit in equanimity with them. You let the fire ignite you and ultimately ignite her. And that turns into sacred sexual energy. That's where it comes from. That's exactly the physics that create that experience. It's a paradox. And that's why this body of work is so difficult to teach. This is why many of the spiritual traditions did away with it, because it's just too difficult to teach a human being this paradox between desire, I want, and equanimity, I allow, because they're in direct conflict of each other. If you want, that means you're not in a state of allowing. And if you allow, if you're truly allowing, that means you don't want anything. But when we unlock this secret of sacred sexual ecstasy, we bring both of those qualities online at the same time. And that's when you as a man feel free and liberated in your sexual energy. You feel completely liberated to be you, to know you, to love as you. You feel liberated in your totality. And she feels claimed by you, desired by you, loved by you, not rushed by you. You never make her feel like she's not enough or like she's too much, because you have this equanimity you're bringing to each and every one of these moments. That's the paradox that we are playing with when we play with fire. That's why, again, why I named the book Playing with Fire, because that is the fire we're playing with. And it takes skillfulness to wield that fire without having the fire go out. and without having that fire burn and rage out of control. That's what we're working with. And you say, here, is that the key? Equanimity? No, equanimity is half the key. The key is the full force of desire and equanimity simultaneously. And when two people do that in lovemaking together, the result is something sacred.
I just want to share, it's sort of quite funny inside me. I want to share like an insight of what my mind has just realized has been happening. And it's on my deepest reason why I actually connect with powerful men like yourself, Justin. Quite often, you know, I have a beautiful capacity to ask a leading question, but I want to honor the presence that you have and the wisdom and the profundity that you speak from. I've noticed I'm actually playing catch up today. And consciously so, because my leading questions, as you speak, it's like my mind is having to readapt to try and get up to speed. And I'm not asking leading questions. I'm asking clarifications of, have I understood correctly? And I just want to own that with the guys going in. This is an edge. It's like, it's so beautiful and refreshing for me to go, wow, Justin is going places. There's no point in me asking a leading question because I haven't fucking know. I don't know if I've understood what he's just after saying. So I just want to lead with that, be open and transparent. And there's a beautiful potency in this. And I have another clarifying comment that my mind is coming up without a question. My question is clarifying, actually, not to lead to another segment, but to clarify, have I understood correctly? Justin, what came through me, the equanimity is only half the battle, and desire is the other half. And there's this dichotomy that you're playing with, like two sides of the coin simultaneously. And it's like, there's, if I'm understanding you correctly, it's almost impossible to just give a binary rational answer. This is how you play it. That's like the mystical art of lovemaking. What was coming through me from a psychosomatic sort of perspective, it's like what the words that came up, Justin, was, okay, so it's actually bringing my heart in and bringing my balls in. It almost comes to me in my rudimentary understanding, intuitive understanding. I haven't read this it's trusting my intuition in the moment, but I feel almost like the equanimity is my heart playing. And my cock and balls is, well, that's my desire. That's what I fucking want. And it's like I'm tapping into the full wisdom of both of them. Is that making sense? Again, within the vulnerable open space, I feel like such a beginner here, even asking the question, but I've got to honor where I'm at in this conversation in relation to you.
That's a very excellent insight and interpretation of what I'm saying. And that's one of the core ways that I teach this in workshops, is how to bring more balls, more of that primal, fierce energy of claim, of desire, and how to simultaneously keep one's heart opened and loving at the same time. So you nailed it. And that's one way we play with this from an embodied perspective, how we get it into your nervous system so you can experience it directly without having to think so much about it.
I'm glad at least on one point I've intuitively got up to speed. And I want to say, Justin, and it's such a beautiful thing, we're coming into landing here. I think an emerging million questions that are coming in to ask you, because when I get one bit of clarity, there's just so many more questions that are coming in. Yeah, that's such a potent way to leave it. And it's my expectation that it's been a heart opening and definitely like simultaneously at the same time, a mind opening experience for every guy listening in. Of all the guys listening in, Justin, I'm really confident that like a lot of guys are going to be super interested to know more about you, about your teachings, about how to work with you. Where online can guys follow up with you, Justin?
The best place to start is to get our new book, Playing with Fire, The Spiritual Path of Intimate Relationship. It's on Amazon. You can get it as a Kindle, or you can get the paperback. That book takes you through step by step many of the things we've described here on this call, but how you cultivate each one of these skills and bring it to your intimate relationship and actually create transformation there. And what's so unique about this book is my partner and I describe these very esoteric teachings in an incredibly simple way that they've never been described before. And you get a real life look at what it looks like when couples begin applying this technology through case studies and also through our own personal experiences. And the book is loaded with practices that you could do on your own and practices you can do with your intimate partner. So we really wrote this book as a manual for anyone who's serious about learning more about this work and developing a practice for themselves. The other place people can go to find me is my website, justinpatrickpierce.com. And on there, you're going to find my online classes, my in-person workshops, where we have men and women come together from all over the world and do these practices for a weekend. So those are just some of the ways you could get started. And I have tons of videos and blogs on my website as well that you can just go ahead and check out if you're interested in learning more.
Justin, it has been it has been invaluable on a personal level to sit in your sacred presence and your just embodied expertise on this topic. So a deep thank you from me personally, and thank you so much for your generosity of time and spirit and wisdom on behalf of every guy listening in. Thanks so much for coming in today, brother.
Oh, Mark, it's been such an honor. And thank you for being so vulnerable and so willing to meet me there in depth and in your own experience. I just really admire that. So I appreciate you and everything that you brought to this call.
Thank you so much for that, for receiving an open heart, Justin. Kingly brothers, heroic husbands listening in. I mean, the gauntlet is set, you know, the masculine expression, how we grow is by direct challenge. And I think every single word that Justin has spoken into this space, the word spoken, and I think the essence beyond the words, is a direct challenge to me personally, as a man, as a lover, as a husband, and to every single one of us that have entered this sacred space with Justin. And yeah, just my direct challenge to you and to me is, like, let's meet the challenge on behalf of the core reason why we do what we do here every day. This has been a beautiful gift that will serve our collective purpose. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have a beautiful, amazing, kingly day. And before you go, kingly brothers, I'm so happy to let you know that Heroic Husbands Men's Circles waiting list is now live. Online meetings supporting you up level to hero husband status. Go from fearing your best will never be good enough to becoming the competent and confident husband she brags about. Save years of needless guesswork and confidence eroding disconnection. Click on the link in the podcast description to take your first simple step to becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Check it out now.